Our host needs no introduction.
His name is...
A name so simple it rolls right off your tongue.
His name is James... No, his name is... James Lawrence!
Try again.
Forrest Lone... Lars!
No!
Chuck Jaffe.
Yes! We're like this!
I'll say it again so you remember, okay? This is Money Life with Chuck Jaffe.
Wow! All I can say is wow!
Please do not overdramatize these proceedings.
And now, here's Chuck.
He's one in a million.
He sure is.
Yeah, there's probably a million guys who do what I do. I'm one of them. I'm one of a million. One in a million? Yeah, no, there's not a million guys who do what I do. In fact, when it comes to some of what I do, I'm a dinosaur, and the rest of it, well, there's plenty of people who do it. They just don't do it the way we do it here on Money Life. This is Money Life for June the 30th. It seems like yesterday I was booking our New Year's guests, and today I'm booking guests for July the 4th and, you know, thereafter. Wow. Hard to believe, but we're going to make the most of our time. We try to do that each and every day. Today, unfortunately, is one of those days where we have a rebroadcast. We have three great segments for you, and the fourth segment is great. It just happens to be something that you might have heard before. I don't like it when that happens, but for whatever reason, as I said the other day, we're booking great guests. They just, like, as we get closer to that July 4th holiday, suddenly it's like, ooh, this is a little trickier than it normally gets. I don't know. We'll solve it all out. Today it affects us in part because we had a cancellation and somebody had to move, and that was okay. We moved them, but it left us with an opening scrambling, as a lot of people, you know, apparently, I guess money managers take the holiday off, right? They can. So let me tell you what's on tap. It's Thursday, so we start with the ETF of the week, after which, oh, that of course means Tom Lydon. I should point that out, right? It's the ETF of the week with Tom Lydon, editor of ETF Trends. After that, our big interview today is with Bob Brown. He is the chief investment officer for Northern Trust. We will be talking big picture stuff, you know, like what the Brexit means and everything else. Then Bob Powell is in, and he's working on a piece that looks at how you can tell if you've got a good 401k plan. And I think it's a good thing to be learning about, not because you go, oh, my plan's not good, I don't want to participate. I mean, he may say that, but I would never say that. I've always said that you sort of need to have optimal returns and just an amazing situation to have it be that you somehow save outside of your 401k and it turns out as well, because, of course, it's tax-deferred savings. And tax advantage savings, if you have a 401k plan available, you can't go off and get a traditional IRA. So you want that vehicle to get tax deferred savings because your money's going to grow that much faster because you're able to put that much more of it to work. Plus, you want any sort of matching funds that you get. So even if it's a bad 401k, you want to take advantage of it. If it's a bad 401k, however, the minute you are no longer with the company, you want to go to the self-directed IRA route. Go pick a low-cost provider, a Vanguard, Fidelity, T. Rowe Price, somebody that you know you can work with that'll have a program that basically helps you move all your money and get it to a good plan. But if you don't have a good plan, you want to be able to go to your employer and say, hey, here's the right stuff. Could we get some of this? And Bob will talk about what some of that is. And then after that, we get to our rebroadcast. That is an interview that we did recently with John Cole Scott from the Closed-End Fund Advisor. I don't think we do enough closed-end fund talk here. We probably do more than anybody else does. But I don't necessarily think it's enough, given what I hear from our regulars. Given that our list of requests for closed-end fund, hold it or fold it, is big relative to the community. You know, what I mean by that is the percentage that we have. Like if you said, how big is the universe of mutual funds? Well, you've got, you know, 13,000 mutual funds and more if you're counting all the ETFs. But let's just say 13,000 or so mutual funds, you know, and we've got I don't know, one out of every one out of every two hundred, one out of every 100. I don't know, whatever the number would be. We've got a lot of fund requests and ETF requests. We've got a lot. But when it comes to closed-end funds, the universe is very small. We have like 100 names to send a guest. That's actually a lot, you know, the size compared to the size of the universe. So I think it's important. I think closed-end funds, I've had a number of you say that if it weren't for the show, you wouldn't own them. And now you do own them. And so I think it's always good for us to present that. And I think they make a compelling case right now with investors who are nervous. Now, you should remember that the John Cole Scott interview aired about 2 weeks ago. So that means it was before a Brexit vote and before the Brexit came back in a shocking form. That said, I don't think it affects anything that you would or would not buy in closed-end fund form. It might have expanded the discount on some things. But again, you know, truthfully, I'm not sure it did, because by now, well, we're almost back to pre-Brexit levels, right? We've almost recouped what we lost in the last week. So basically, at least in the last week, we've had a round trip and it hasn't been a big deal. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch, host of this show every weekday. You'll find my columns on MarketWatch. You'll find my voice here. Money Life is independent personal finance talk. We're trying to help you make your way in the financial world. We do that by presenting a wide range of approaches and opinions on investing. We are willing to accept and understand every investment tool, and that sometimes means we're going to talk about things that you're not interested in. Maybe you don't care about closed-end funds. That's okay, too. Or maybe you're not an ETF investor. Maybe you're not an individual stock jockey. That's okay. So sometimes we're going to present you stuff that you're not interested in. We're certainly going to present things that don't see the market the way you do, no matter what that is, no matter how you see the market, because we're going to try to get as much as we can in there. And the hope is that we can help you become better investors. That's because you're going to, at some point, hear things that help you firm up the courage of your convictions. We'd love to have you involved in the show. Money Life, at Money Life Show, is our Twitter. At MKTW Jaffe is my Twitter for Market Watch. And stick around to the end of the show, because, of course, I don't have to do a recap on John Cole Scott, but I got to tell you something that I had to do the other day, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. It was part of my job, kind of embarrassing, and yet you may find it. It may affect you directly. If it did, that would weird me out, but I'd want to know. So stick around to the end of the show, and we'll talk about that at the last little bit today. We got a great show, even with a rebroadcast. Again, our lineup, Tom Lydon to Bob Brown, then Bob Powell, then John Cole Scott. We'll start things off with the ETF of the week when Money Life continues in just a moment.
Looking for alternative ETF strategies? Direction provides separate and distinct audiences with flexible investment tools to manage risk and execute short-term strategies. For more information, go to directionshares.com.
Well, I don't favor talking to vermin, but I'll talk to you just this once.
Exchange-traded funds are the investment world's new frontier.
You better listen.
But with so many choices and styles, the ETF world is a bit like the Wild Wild West, filled with new issues and ideas, but fraught with the same old dangers of investing.
If you're looking for trouble, I'll accommodate you.
Every Thursday, Tom Lydon of ETF Trends comes to Money Life to tell us about one ETF that is wearing the white hat right now.
Take it easy. We're the good guys.
He'll point out the good, the bad, and the ugly as he tells you which investment is worth taking a shot on.
That's good shooting.
And names his ETF of the week.
Wild West.
Tom Lydon is back right now with the ETF of the week. Tom is the editor at ETFtrends.com. If you go to the website, you will find sort of soup to nuts, everything you could want to learn about ETFs, whether it's new ETFs and products that are being developed, what's going on in the industry, trends that are happening both in terms of the investment trends and what might be hot or popular, also the trends in terms of what products are new and developing or not developing and playing out as they might have otherwise been expected to. There's all that and more. It's ETFtrends.com. They're on Twitter at ETFtrends. Tom is on Twitter personally at Tom Lydon. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chuck. Great to be back.
Our ETF of the week is
The Pro Shares S&P Mid-Cap 400 Dividend Aristocrats ETF, ticker symbol REGL.
REGL, the Pro Shares S&P Mid-Cap 400 Dividend Aristocrats ETF. Okay, so what we know here is that we're looking at one of those funds based on an index that takes a methodology and kind of says, hey, this is a better way to plumb this particular portion of the market. I want to know, therefore, what's better about this and then why we want to plumb mid caps right now.
Well, if you're an ETF nerd, this is a fund just for you. There are a lot of ETFs out there that represent historical indexes like the S&P 500 or the Russell 2000. And then we've seen this evolution, Chuck, in the last 5 years of what they call smart beta ETFs or factor-oriented ETFs. One of the most popular factors has been dividend-oriented ETFs that have historically good-performing stocks that are consistent with their dividend strategy. This ETF and the folks at ProShares have a suite of what they call dividend aristocrats, where they actually have only stocks that have growing dividends over time. So imagine if you could look at the S&P 500 and every year only keep the underlying index full of those companies that continue to grow their dividends. That's in fact what they've done with their large cap ETF. It's called NOBL or Noble. This is the mid-cap version, and mid-caps have actually outperformed large caps over time, but it's the same strategy. And most people don't think about mid or small cap stocks as being dividend-oriented. With this smart beta strategy, ProShares goes in and does all the work for you in selecting those mid-cap stocks that have been consistently growing their dividends over time. And there's a lot of demand for that lately. A, number one, it shows the health or continued improved health of the companies, number one. Number two, because mid-caps outperform large caps over time, it makes sense if you like this strategy to move some of the large cap money to mid-cap. And number three, almost most importantly, with a lot of threat to the fixed income market with rising interest rates or the threat of rising interest rates, a lot of smart investors are shifting over to dividend-oriented equity ETFs where there's a consistent dividend strategy. In this case, this ETF is almost paying 2% a year in a yield in addition to its, you know, fashionable growth. So kind of a neat strategy here. It definitely is something that you can follow on a 200-day moving average. Again, REGL, all you need to do is look at it and make sure, though, that if this is a technical trading solution for you, that you keep an eye on that 200-day average for sure. The other thing, what you and I have been talking about lately, Chuck, is because large caps over the last couple years have outperformed small caps and mid caps, most investors are way overweight in the large cap area, and they're going to find when we see things revert back to the mean and small and mid start outperforming large again, we're going to see a shift. You don't want to be left behind when that shift happens.
So is what you're suggesting that, hey, take some of your winnings out of the large cap pool and reallocate or rebalance using this fund?
I think so. So first of all, if you like a dividend strategy, a dividend grower strategy, this is a great smart cap factor solution for you. And if you can also move some of that large cap off the table to have at least some representation in mid cap, it makes sense from a long-term buy and hold standpoint. However, if you like the strategy, but you're also concerned about market corrections, it's an easy fund to track on a 200-day average. And every month that you're in there, you're still getting that dividend, which is nice. But if you want to be able to have something that you can watch and pull the trigger, if it goes below its long-term trend line, this is an easy one for you.
Yeah. And as we always tell people, if you're there is that side that says if you're doing stuff based on the 200-day moving average, do that. Stick with that. If you're trading that way, et cetera, don't like waffle between the two.
Yeah, if you've got money that's in cash and you're happy it's in cash, but now you're moving into this ETF, that's great. But it's on you if you're going to follow a tactical strategy to watch it on a regular basis.
Exactly. So you can be a long-term investor. You can be a trader and a technical watcher. Don't confuse the two, because this fund can serve both purposes. It is the ProShares S&P Mid-Cap 400 Dividend Aristocrats Fund. It is REGL, the ETF of the week from Tom Lydon. Tom, thanks as always for joining us.
Thanks, Chuck.
Tom Lydon is the editor at ETF Trends. It's ETFTrends.com, and he's on Twitter at Tom Lydon. ETF Trends is at ETF Trends. What a great way to start the June 30th edition of Money Life. We have so much more to go, so settle back and relax, and don't you dare touch that dial. We're living the money life, and we'll be back to it in just a moment.
Hightower is a groundbreaking team of financial advisors committed to giving you access to best-in-class financial products and services, a practice often overlooked by brokers on Wall Street. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
It's time for the big interview!
What is going on here? I demand an explanation.
The big names, the big news, the biggest stories, the next big thing. What's the big deal? It's the big interview.
It's the big stuff. You talking to me?
Who do you think you are?
We have a big show for you tonight.
Money Life brings you the big thinkers, top experts, the brightest minds.
I don't know how to put this, but kind of a big deal.
And plenty of time to swim in their brain fluid.
Oh, my.
So listen and learn and enjoy the big interview.
The eyes of the nation are on us right now.
Whatever. Fun will now commence.
Yeah, you know, right now, fun may not be the right word when you're looking at the market and what's going on in the world, unless you're an observer and you get to have some fun talking about it. And we do, because, well, the big deal, the next big thing, all that stuff, it's been rolled into one big word this week and at the end of last. That, of course, being the Brexit. And that has a lot of people looking at the market differently going forward now than they were as recently as 5 or 10 days ago. Here to discuss his view on the market is Bob Brown, Chief Investment Officer at Northern Trust. Now, if you want more information, northerntrust.com, at NT Invest on Twitter. Bob Brown, welcome to Money Life.
Thank you. Good to be here. Appreciate it.
I have said that I think the Brexit may be a historic event, but it's not a portfolio event for most individual investors. I've written that. But what I just said in introducing you is that people are looking differently now at the market and what's going on than they were 5 or 10 days ago. Did I just overstate the case, or did I just understate the case?
Well, I think there's a high likelihood that in the long run you understated the case, that your Brexit, as you point out, is a historical event, and it's really quite early days to determine the impact on anyone's portfolio or the broader capital markets. But the initial reaction that we saw, it does now reveal that people are revisiting what's going on. That knee-jerk reaction to sell, sell, sell is no longer appropriate. We are almost back to the Friday before the week of Brexit, so that June 17th date where we subsequently had a run-up in the equity market and then, of course, a vicious sell-off, and it's almost as if nothing happened. But something did significantly happen, and we're being prudent and deliberate about what this means for our portfolios going forward.
So that being the case, when we say we're being prudent for what this means for our portfolios going forward, does that mean we're basically staying the course with the allocations we had before, or we're revisiting and saying this is an opportunity, or we're saying, no, 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 let's get more defensive?
Well, we certainly think that for the next few weeks, there will probably be more opportunity to lose money than to make money, because the information flow is going to be constant, continuous, and then often contradictory. And it's really difficult for a long-term investor to take advantage of that as opposed to being a victim of it. So we absolutely think there are opportunities to revisit what this might mean for portfolio strategy that was in place beforehand. And that's what we're doing. We have yet to make a move. We've had a series of investment meetings. We have more coming up. But at this point in time, especially at quarter end, where liquidity is already drying up and there's lots of flows simply related to the end of the quarter and the opportunity for getting whipsawed is high, at this point in time, it's better to sit out. We went into Brexit modestly overweight risk with a preference for U.S. assets over international assets, and we still feel comfortable with that. But as we get information over the next few weeks and policymakers themselves get a handle on what this means, then we'll act if we need to.
From the perspective of the what this means long term, does this ultimately have you thinking that, hey, the Brexit is the first? We're going to wind up seeing a Grexit, a departure goal, an Italy, a checkout, a big finish, and any of the other things that could come along and wind up basically changing the landscape again and again and again going forward?
Well, that is definitely one of several possibilities. The problem is the range of possibilities are quite diverse and different from each other. So the worst case scenario is the one that you just mentioned. This is the beginning of the breakup of the European Union, that after this, it's either Scotland and Northern Ireland who are already fighting over what this means to be a member of the UK or not. Certainly, people are already focusing on Italy as well. But the flip side is, a year from now, when the politics are very different, we're not saying this has much of a chance in the short term, the UK, before it formally exits from the UK, could have another, from the European Union, could also have a redo. During the whole Eurozone project, several countries reversed their referendums, or in some cases even ignored them. So I'm not saying the probability of that is high, but you have to visualize the future. People are already talking about the Brexit implications quite differently from what they were saying just Friday afternoon, holding out the possibility that maybe it could be a EU light version for the UK versus a really hard, painful exit. So we're going through this discovery process. But that discovery process could lead to something really uncomfortable and painful, and it could be the beginning of the European Union dissolution. But it's way too early to come to that conclusion, just as it is way too early to think this was just a mistake, that the UK is going to look for the first politically feasible opportunity to reverse. That's too early to assess as well. So we're focusing on what is more likely than conjecture at this point in time.
If you had to guess for the remainder of this year, which is going to affect the markets more, Brexit or the domestic presidential election here?
Well, for the U.S. market, I think without doubt the presidential election is going to be more impactful, as is the overall economic environment in the U.S. Remember, more than half of economic growth for the last 5 years has come from two nations, China and the U.S. And so the further we get away from Brexit, the more the market will begin to focus on other factors besides the U.K. deciding to leave the European Union. Next week, we have the non-farm payroll. That's always one of the most important pieces of economic data. We'll have an ongoing release of Chinese data. We'll start to see politically what Donald Trump and Clinton have to say more and more about immigration policy. And we'll also start thinking about what the Fed is going to be doing in July. All these factors slowly but steadily start to make the market realize it's not all about Brexit. Now, the latter is incredibly important and significant, not just for Europe and the UK, but the world. But there are other factors of significance, including the presidential election. And that's what people need to remember. Investors tend to be very short-sighted and focus on the event, especially if it's unexpected, as Brexit was, and place a huge amount of emphasis on it until something else comes along. That something else will be a presidential election. What Fed policy is going to be in the July meeting, a series of economic important data coming out of the U.S. and China over the next month. Those things will start to be countermeasures to this fixation on the Brexit vote.
The Fed, of course, has been central to everything economic for quite some time. And the expectation was going to be higher rates this year. we've now, in light of the Brexit, seen every central bank ready to step in and add liquidity, et cetera. Do you think that the Fed is a significant factor for the rest of this year?
Well, longer term, we absolutely believe both the Fed, the ECB, and the Bank of Japan are getting close to tapping out their resources for affecting the capital markets, let alone the broad economy. Having said all that, they remain arguably the most important financial slash policymaking institution in the markets. And that is not going to be any different. Even though they're looking to truly exit QE and this experiment of phenomenal monetary accommodation, the Brexit vote simply makes it that much more difficult to exit. We think the market is correct to have fully removed the prospects of a Fed hike this year as well as next year. And we also think it's as likely that the next move by the Fed in the future could be a rate reduction as opposed to a rate increase. We never felt that the Fed was about to begin a long series of steady rate hikes. We always felt there was a more balanced range of probabilities of the Fed being flat to slightly up to maybe even down. And the Brexit vote simply gives us more confidence in that view that rates will remain lower for longer and that the Fed is going to be on hold this year if they try one more hike because the economic data in the U.S. turns out to be okay despite the Brexit. I think what they will see is simply a continued flattening of the yield curve, and they should be very wary of that.
Are we set up right now where we're going to have a step back, a fallback, or are we going to have something that, you know, we've basically inflated a bubble and one of these events is going to pop it and we're going to wind up seeing some major sort of event?
Well, without doubt, the Brexit vote realized one of our key risk scenarios, that populist politics would lead to more political uncertainty and potential reversal of policy. So here we are. It's been realized. Now we need to wait and see what happens with regard to, is there a higher probability of coordinated fiscal stimulus in the U.S.? Is there major immigration reform in the U.S.? And I would say, is that immigration reform really a euphemism for a rolling back of a fairly flexible and liberal immigration policy, whether Trump or Clinton gets elected? And so you really have to think about how all this unfolds in the long term as well as the short term. Our longer term view, while affected by Brexit, is still within the guardrails of the following, that we expect equity returns to be relatively modest, and no one is going to be reasonably expecting double-digit returns in risk assets. However, we also think that cash yields are going to be quite low, as will be bond yields overall, and you need to be fully invested to get your mid-single-digit return. And so that's the takeaway from all this.
Well, a great way to leave it with that takeaway. Bob, this has been great. I hope we get a chance to chat with you again at some point.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Bob Brown is the Chief Investment Officer at Northern Trust. For more information, it's northerntrust.com. They're on Twitter at NTInvest. We're halfway done with Money Life. That means there's lots more to go, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Customize an investment portfolio with FlexShares, ETFs designed to pursue targeted goals and to adapt to changing market conditions with both equity and fixed income solutions. For more information, go to FlexShares.com.
Your retirement years are coming. Are you financially ready for your retirement?
You know, I've been thinking.
Oh, that would explain the beads of sweat.
Don't let this happen to you.
I'm afraid it's just not sufficient to refinance your home.
Where shall I go? What shall I do?
My advice to you, start drinking heavily.
Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something is happening.
Bob Powell knows where to turn and how to help you with your financial needs as you plan for or live in retirement.
Here I come to save the day.
It's all here as Retirement Weekly's Bob Powell joins Money Life every week for Senior Focus.
Senior citizens, although slow and dangerous behind the wheel, can still serve a purpose.
Well, today we're going to help you find out whether or not your 401k is actually serving its purpose well, or better yet, if you have a 401k that can properly serve the purpose. Because one of the things we talk about on the show regularly is, hey, you need to be participating in your 401k plan, even if it's a bad plan, because of the benefits of doing it. But you also need to know what a good plan looks like. And Bob Powell, editor of Retirement Weekly. Well, he's writing on just that very subject right now. Bob is a columnist in the Retirement Mentor section at MarketWatch.com. He's editor of Retirement Weekly, which is a MarketWatch product. So if you find his columns, you'll find links. You can also find him on Twitter at RJPIII. Bob Powell, welcome back to the show.
Chuck, thanks for having me on.
So like I said, everybody needs to participate in their retirement plan. We always talk about that. And like I said, we say participate even if it's a bad plan. But you're looking at what people should be looking at that defines a good plan, and maybe you can help people figure out whether or not their plan actually qualifies.
Yeah. So the lead at the moment to this column is if you're going to have a 401k, it might as well be a good one, right? I mean, it might as well be best in class, because why should you settle for anything less when it comes to your retirement money? PlanSponsored magazine each and every year reviews 401k plans and then it identifies best in class 401k plans. And among the things that it did in this year's survey was that it identified the traits of a best in class 401k plan. And I'll read the four traits and then we can go into each and every one of them. So the first is that the plan shows a commitment to plan success through strong oversight and governance practices. Two, it produces strong outcomes related to helping employees prepare for retirement. Three, it goes beyond just helping people save for retirement to helping them succeed financially. And fourth, it uses features that make it easier, not harder, for participants to achieve their savings goals. And it identified 25 firms, and you'll find a link to those 25 firms in my column when it gets published. So a little bit more about the strong oversight and governance. One of the experts I spoke to suggested that 401k plans that have strong oversight, at a minimum, have three things, an investment committee, an investment policy statement, or what's called an IPS, and then benchmark fees. And he says those are good beginning points. He said if he was a plan participant, he would want to personally review the IPS and then learn how the benchmarking is done, especially with regard to the reasonableness of record keeping and admin fees and the due diligence process used to compare and select and monitor the funds and the investments in the plan. So that's one. Two is, I'll call it strong retirement readiness outcomes. According to Plan Sponsor Magazine, three things are parts of this trait. One is a high participation rate on the part of employees in a plan. Typically, it's around 70 to 80% of employees participate. A very high annual savings rate, more than 10% of one's salary, which is a little bit high because, according to Vanguard's latest report, it's on average, the deferral rates are around 7.8%. And then the third thing would be high matching and or profit sharing company contributions. And again, about 80% of companies, 0.75% of companies offer what's called a single tier match formula, which is they'll contribute 50 cents on the dollar on the first 6% of pay that you contribute. So that's strong retirement readiness. I should mention that while it's important to have high participation rates and savings rates and whatnot, it's also important, the experts I spoke to said, that there are quality investments in the plan. You know, it's one thing to have those three factors, high rates, high savings rates and whatnot, but if you don't have quality investments, it could be all for naught. So at a minimum, when I talked about reviewing the IPS and how that you monitor the funds and keep the funds and discard the funds, make sure that these funds tend to be high-quality investments. The other important thing about best-in-class 401k plans is that they tend to have fewer investment options rather than more. And then number three was the plan helps people succeed financially. Now, according to one expert I spoke to, he said, you know, it's not really fundamental to a retirement plan that they help people succeed financially. But if they are in the business of doing this, education is probably the key to having this happen. And it's not just education around savings and investing. It would be education around all the relevant areas of personal finance. And it wouldn't be, you know, marketing programs. Number four was has features that make it easier to achieve savings goals. And those tend to revolve around auto-enrollment and auto-escalation. But those two things may not be enough. Again, if the investment options are poor, in both in terms of cost efficiency or overall performance, you know, you might want to think twice about whether those things actually help you achieve your savings goals. If your plan is less than best, you can do a couple things. You can walk down to HR and to say, you know, can we have these things that make up a, you know, typical best-in-class 401k plan, strong governance, quality investments, fewer investments, financial wellness programs. But at the end of the day, if you probably won't be able to change a whole heck of a lot, you know, right away. So what you might consider, bottom line, what the experts I spoke to said, that you might want to worry less about whether your plan is best in class and more about whether what you're doing is best for you. And so that's how the column ends at the moment, is this notion that, you know, best is good, but best for you is better.
Well, and ultimately, it's like I said, as a general rule, you can run the math, even if you've got less than ideal funds or you've got share structures that are expensive. As a general rule, the power of tax deferred savings, pre-tax savings, and any match that you can capture, et cetera, winds up making it that you're better off doing it, even if, you know, the minute you retire, resign, quit, get fired or whatever, you want to move your money into something much better. You're still better off sort of holding your nose and participating in a bad plan. But the real ideal
is better than no plan.
Exactly.
And a good plan would be better than a bad plan. So,
exactly. You know, I think pushing your employers for a good plan and maybe showing them the shortcomings and say, hey, you know, maybe you can't make up all of this, but you can make up one or two things. That would be a help and a big step in the right direction. Bob, thanks as always for joining us.
Chuck, thanks for having me on the show.
You can find Bob Powell's column on this subject in the Retire Mentor section at MarketWatch.com. You can go from there to market to find more out about Retirement Weekly. And, of course, you can get alerts and more from Bob about when he's writing and what he's doing by following him on Twitter at RJPIII. All right, we're heading for home on today's edition of Money Life. So settle back and relax. Pick up speed and hit the home stretch right after this message.
When it comes to managing your financial portfolio, Hightower's advisors don't limit your access to proprietary financial products and services, a common Wall Street practice. At Hightower, you get unobstructed advice. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
It's hard to know what to do next in the stock market.
Where am I? What am I doing here?
That's because one expert's rally is another's prelude to a correction.
Of course, people do go both ways.
One manager's buy is another man's sell.
Have you come to any conclusions yet?
Each day, the Money Life Market Call brings you a different expert's take on where to invest and what to avoid.
Now listen, Grapehead, I'll explain it so even you can understand it.
Just as important, you'll find out the reasons behind that thinking, and that should make your next financial decisions easier and smarter.
We do have a system, and it works.
It's the Money Life Market Call. Now.
The only reason we're here is to make catty observations and rude remarks. And that was nothing good on TV.
Well, if you're a closed-end fund investor, there is never anything good on TV, at least talking about closed-end funds. I mean, you know, you might like a ball game or something, but you're really never going to hear about closed-end funds. And even here on Money Life, where we cover them occasionally, there's probably not enough for you. But you got to be happy today because John Cole Scott is joining us. He is the Chief Investment Officer at Closed End Fund Advisors. So he is a specialist in closed end funds. If you want more information, cefadvisors.com is the website, and you can go there for more information. And by the way, I'm going to take a moment here. We're going to answer with John a question that we got from an audience member who heard that he was coming on and sent a question. And if that happens to you, like if you ever hear somebody's coming on or what have you, well, then you want to send us the question. That you do, Chuck at MoneyLifeShow.com. John Cole Scott, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, Chuck.
We're going to start with the question we always start with, which is about investment methodology. But we'll keep that quick, and then we're going to get to the question from Rich in Orchard Beach, Maryland, that takes the methodology a step further. So tell us what makes a closed-end fund stand out to you and what makes it a no-go.
Well, first off, we think about how the closed-end funds are diversified portfolios themselves. They're managed by an actual portfolio manager. So you think about our role in the world. It's to look at the guts or the sector that the manager is doing work in, and then to look at the wrapper or the structure, the closed-end fund piece. The thing that makes a closed-end fund versus an ETF or an open-end fund. And we really narrow it down to the three primary things. One is discount direction. We want to be narrowing discounts or stable. We want dividend sustainability. We want stable dividends, or we always will take an increase. And we want net asset value performance after cost. It's the return of the manager for his sector, because we care more about that than expense ratios, because we find, unlike many people seem to focus on for ETFs and open-end funds, sometimes in the closing fund world, you pay more for the right manager, you pay more for higher turnover sometimes, and you really, but the net result is really the most important piece. And I'd say with those three things, you're a three-legged stool, get all three right, it's hard to fall off. Get two right, you're on the ground.
Okay, so let's now go to this question that we have, again, from Rich in Orchard Beach, Maryland. He wanted to know, how do you select between very similar closed-end funds from the same fund family? For example, ClearBridge has four MLP CEFs, MLP Master Limited Partnerships, closed-end funds, of course, closed-end funds. They are CEM, EMO, CTR, and CBA. They look a lot alike. They have a lot of overlap in holdings. I did notice.
You want me to give my opinion?
Yeah. Well, he wants to know what's a prudent way to select between them.
All right. So there is good news. We interview the manager for the Scott Letter, which is a free newsletter, journalistic style newsletter on our website. Just click the Scott Letter button on our page. And you can read us 5,000 word, their version of the answer. I'm going to focus on the two funds with the most different discount level because discounts are often a major feature for a closing fund investor. So CEM is about a 2 discount and CBA is about a 9.5 discount. So basically a 7 discount difference in the two funds. The yields are both 9 and 9 and low change. There's not much difference in what markets are asking for from the portfolios. But if you look deeper, because the leverage is a little higher on CEM, but the discount is much wider, significantly wider on CBA, the leverage-adjusted NAV yield is a little bit, you know, lower, but they're approximately the same. What that means, if take out discounts and leverage, the manager has to hit to the same yield. So now with an MLP fund, you got to dig a little deeper. You've got to look at what type of pipelines it owns. And luckily for your readers and you and anyone else, our new CEFdata.com has free fund profiles, and because MLPs have been so interesting the last few months, we actually break out each closed-end fund in the sector by their type of MLP focus. CEM is 60% pipeline transportation and about 26% G&P, you know, more upstream style. CBA is more, it's only 40% transportation or pipeline and 34% G&P. It's more of a tilt than a dramatically different, like inverse to each other.
Right.
But what that tells me is right now the market's discounting CBA for fear of oil prices, 7% wider discount. Yet you're not getting a huge difference in the portfolio, but enough it should be noticed. And you mentioned return of capital in the note you sent me. Yeah, it's really, it's not bad on a one-year basis for CEM. It's 78%. But it's 100% for CBA, which if you have a taxable account and you're a high tax bracket investor, will push you that direction. But just be thoughtful that the NAV performance and the way the market's going to treat CBA is going to be a little bit more volatile than CEM. But right now you have to pay up 7% for it. And you got to decide, do you think oil is going to go up or down the next 1 to 3 years?
Okay. So ultimately it's going to wind up, it's a little bit of both. You could make a case for either. But it's going to be, are you deciding based on that discount versus that volatility? And it's why you look deeper into the picture. Now, you talked about the things that you like. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you what comes through your process right now and stands out to you.
And those funds in particular. What's interesting, the expense ratios, X leverage is about the same, but that's not different. I would say the major difference is just CBA's lower leverage, 25% versus 28%. Again, these are such small differences. I mean, it is the same fund sponsor, the same management team with tilts. I mean, CBA is a newer fund. So, I mean, I'll say CEM historically, you know, is more likely to possibly pull back farther. So that's the downside with that narrow discount. But remember, with closed-end funds, you're not picking one management team, one stock per se. You're picking a manager's selection of usually 30 to 100 different things. And so I would say the major difference is those tilts for discounts and underlying exposure. And you have to decide as an investor which direction of the tilts you want to be on. Not the answer you wanted, but it's the only way I can get into the data.
It's not the answer that I wanted because it gives us more details on the four funds that we were talking about from ClearBridge. But actually, I was hoping what comes through the process beyond that in the outside world. If you had to say, hey, here's the shining example of what looks good to us right now, that's what I want.
Got it. So we do like, there's a BDC we like. It's a little newer. It's ABDC. That's a ticker symbol. So it's kind of a fun name to remember. About a 16 discount, which is a few points wider than its peers. It's a little bit more second lien loans. For people that don't know BDCs, they're like a closed-end fund. They're a closed-ended management company, but they generally do private loans to U.S. companies, mostly secured loans, but some unsecured. But like 75% of the loans are usually secured. Many of the funds do an overweight on first lien, but ABDC does a second lien slight overweight, which the market looks like it's discounted. But its leverage is lower than normal, and its guts performance on a 1 and 3 year basis have been it was almost 3 years old, been solid versus the peer group. And so it's a great way if you want to play the BDC space, and it's mostly variable loans. It's yielding right now about 11%, which is actually a little bit below the peer group average. So it's not like it's a high yield version of a BDC. Another thing that we like right now, kind of on the sector side, you know, healthcare has a great 3 year record, a crappy 1 year record. Well, Tekla, a great group up in Boston, has four closed-end funds. Will be the next interview in our newsletter, has THQ, which is a more income-focused play. So it's had better NAV because the sector's been a little bit struggling, so its income investments have outperformed pure growth. But it's at a 10 discount, yielding about 10, and it's a very good way to get into the manager's brain and be a way to play healthcare without being full equity, full growth.
Well, now we're going to find out how you feel about some closed-end funds that my audience is particularly interested in.
Play, hold it.
You got to know when to hold up.
Or fold it.
Know when to fold up.
Yes, it's hold it or fold it time with my guest, John Cole Scott. He is the Chief Investment Officer for Closed End Fund Advisors. By the way, you can follow him on Twitter. He's at John Cole Scott. The firm is online at cefadvisors.com, advisors, O-R, advisors.com. Hold it or fold it, you know how it works. But if you want to participate directly, send your name, your hometown, and the ticker symbols you're interested in. Not just for closed end funds, it can be traditional funds, ETFs, also stocks. And we'll add it to our list and hope it makes it into an interview soon. We started with the question from Rich in Orchard Beach, Maryland. So we're going to continue with two ticker symbols from him. The first is for the Madison Covered Call and Equity Strategy. That's MCN.
MCN is a covered call style strategy, but a 10 discount, 9.5 yield. If you back out the discount, I mean, the manager has to blend to 8 and change to meet the policy. Remember, closing fund dividends are policies, not promises. What I like about it mostly is it has a beta. It's a mostly stock-focused portfolio, some bond exposure, but it's a beta of 0.6, which gives you a little bit less volatility with the same type of potential upside of equities. And its net asset value performance has been good. So $0.90, not ridiculous dividend policy, lower beta access point to a covered call fund. We like the fund. We own it.
That's a buy on MCN, the Madison Covered Call and Equity Strategy. Rich's other request was Voya Prime Rate Trust, PPR.
PPR is a floating rate style investment. A few years ago, it was at a premium with the whole neighborhood. Now it's at a 9 discount, which is normal for the sector. The average discount for 3 years is about 7 discount. Leverage isn't crazy at 29%. The yield 6.2, which is funny. Any other neighborhood, you'd say that's high, but in the closing fund world, the only thing much below that is investment grade and munis. So relatively low sustainable dividend policy. Good coverage. Recently had a small 2% increase of yield, which suggests the management and the board feel that there's coverage in the near to medium term for the fund. And yet solid performance on a 3 year basis, it's 6 out of 25. After cost for its peers. So to me, it's a nice, solid performer with all the trifecta covered for the fund.
Could we please buy now?
That's a buy on the Voya Prime Rate Trust, PPR. Malcolm in Eugene, Oregon, wants to know about the PIMCO Global Stocks Plus and Income. That's PGP.
So I'll start by saying PIMCO is some of the smartest bond managers in the world, even with Mr. Gross leaving. However, when you buy something at 100% premium and the manager has to blend to 16% to meet the policy of the board and the dividend policy is only covering by earnings 60% and it's on a 1 year NAV basis, it's last place in its peer group and its 10 year NAV performance is only just below 4% annualized. I don't know how it's going to pay the 11.5% market yield or the 16%, you know, leverage adjusted NAV yield. So not saying it can't go up higher. I can always be wrong, but I wouldn't put this in anyone's account.
This one has just been defying gravity for a long time, hasn't it?
It has until, so the challenge is that well until investors believe the yield's not sustainable. They did a cut, but it's rallied back up. It's trading right at 95 percentile of its three-year range. It's a very, you know, retail-driven, yield-driven product. PIMCO's a great brand name. People hear them all the time on Bloomberg. So I just don't see how any of the three things I care about will help you in this matter.
Yeah, great brand name, perhaps, but...
Whoa, dumber than advertised.
Yeah, dumber than advertised. That's a sell on PGP, the PIMCO Global Stocks Plus and Income closed-end fund. Dan in Meadville, Pennsylvania, wants to know about the AllianceBernstein National Municipal Income closed-end fund. That's AFB.
Yeah, so AFB is not like a BlackRock, Nuveen, well-known major sponsor in the sector, but sporting almost a 6 discount, which is well wider than the average for the neighborhood. Yields about 5, which is slightly lower than the neighborhood, but still solid for tax-free income. Coverage is above par. They did do a recent dividend cut, so I mean, we didn't own it. It's not the perfect fund for our needs. If you buy it now after that dividend cut, can be helpful. Duration's only 5.8, low for a closed end. Almost all investment grade. It's a good equity hedge, this sector is. And its NAV performance is actually quite strong on a three-year basis. It's 11 out of 71 peers. So I'd say it's a solid portfolio with a lesser-known brand.
Okay, so that would be a buy on AFB, the AllianceBernstein National Municipal Income Fund.
Would you mind stepping aside? I've got a purchase to make.
And last, for Abe in Pompano Beach, Florida, it's Calamos Total Return, ticker symbol CSQ.
Yes, so this is a neat fund. It's almost 60% stocks, a little tiny sliver of international, mostly U.S., 7% preferreds, 16% U.S. bonds, 12% convertible bonds. So, you know, it's really a balanced fund, trading at 90 cents on the dollar or a 10 discount. Normal for the fund. You know, I don't expect the discount to ever change, but remember, discounts don't have to narrow for you to have the benefits of free leverage. You buy a dollar a portfolio for 90 cents. As long as the manager doesn't have high cost or the results go down, it's not a bad thing. And so the net asset value performance has been solid. And then if it were to be in a taxable account, just the way they manage the portfolio, about half of the sustainable yield, in my opinion, is return of capital, which is tax deferred. So to me, it's a neat balance fund. It is levered 28%, which you may be thoughtful of if you're going to buy it, but it's a nice access point to the Calamos team. Just make sure you look under the hood and see what you're getting. But I like what I see. It's a good part of a balanced portfolio.
With those caveats, I guess it's a cautious buy. It's a buy, but a cautious buy on the Calamos Total Return closed-end fund, CSQ.
Buyer beware, dude.
And unfortunately, well, now we have to talk about goodbyes. Specifically, we have to say our goodbyes to John Cole Scott. But, John, it's always great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to getting a chance to do it again later this year.
Thanks so much, Chuck.
John Cole Scott is the Chief Investment Officer at Closed End Fund Advisors. If you want more information, cefadvisors.com, on Twitter, at John Cole Scott. All right, we're just about done with the June 16th edition of Money Life, but just about means not quite. We'll cross the finish line together if you stay through this message. Come back when Money Life wraps things up in just a moment.
PowerShares provides a different take on traditional asset categories while providing advisors and investors with innovative investment opportunities. For more information, go to PowerShares.com. Invesco Distributors, Incorporated.
Welcome back to Money Life. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch. I said those words the other day, not just here on the show, but I had to do a read for a MarketWatch cruise. Now, you may have heard me say something about it, but if you haven't and you're interested, well, fine. MarketWatch is doing a cruise. Bob Powell and I will be on it, which will be fun. It's in October. It'll affect the show somehow because it'll be difficult for me to do the show, but we'll do something where we can find a way to keep the show going a little bit during that time. But we've got the MarketWatch cruise. It is coming up in October, Montreal to New York. Bob Powell, Mark Hulbert, Jeremy Olshan, my boss, the editor of MarketWatch, and others. And Crystal Serenity, part of the Crystal Cruise Line. Fabulous. I've only done one cruise. It was a MarketWatch cruise many, many years ago, like 2006, 2005, something like that. And fabulous. I'm excited for it. But I got a note from my bosses at MarketWatch going, Chuck, given that you talk to people and you have this voice that apparently is okay for radio, I also have a face that's good for radio, how about you voice some phone ads? Now, I'm not on the do not call list. I get all this sort of stuff all the time. In fact, you've heard some of it because we use it on the show. And they have a system that would allow me to actually use it on the show if they called back and did it. I can tell you what it said, but it's just me reading an ad. It's like, hi, this is Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch. Inviting you to join us on the 2016 MarketWatch cruise, or whatever they're calling it, actually. And I have mixed emotions because obviously I want to help and I hope that the cruise goes well. And this would be a lot of fun. I mean, it is a lot of fun, and I'm going. They're not going to cancel it. But it's one of these things where I have mixed emotions because, well, honestly, I hate getting these calls. Now, most of the time, they're not recorded by real people. And in fact, like the one that I remember was the time I got a call from Carmen Electra. Yes, that Carmen Electra. Carmen Electra with that sexy voice talking about a stock. I'm not kidding. I wrote a column about it. The stock was called Luvoo, L-U-V-O-O. It was a penny stock. It was stupid investment of the week. It went away. The cruise, not that way, but literally there's one if you pick up and you're a live person. There's one if it gets your voicemail, and it's my voice with me saying it. So I hope that people don't hate me. This is my boss. When my bosses tell me I got to do it, I got to do it. But I have to say, mixed emotions. You know what I have no mixed emotions about? That tomorrow's going to be a bang-up show. Brian Frank from the Frank Fund will be here. Brad Lammensdorf from the Ranger Equity Bear ETF will be here, and much, much more. So I hope you'll plan to be here. We will try to do better with tomorrow's show than we did today, and I thought we did okay today. That's why I want to thank my guests from today. Of course, Tom Lydon and Bob Powell are regulars, and then Bob Brown, and although John Cole Scott wasn't here live with us, he was here with us to make it that we could have that rebroadcast today. I want to thank Rob Floyd, my producer, and I want to thank you for being here. Again, I say it all the time. I can't tell you enough how much you mean to me and how much your being here makes this so much fun. Well, today's Money Life quote of the day comes from Warren Buffett, another of the great things he has said. And this one is, the most important thing to do if you find yourself in a hole is to stop digging. And, you know, we hope that you never get in a hole. And that's why we tell you that each and every day, that until we do this again the next time, the best thing you can do for your money is not worry too much about it. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
The opinions expressed on Money Life are those of the host and guests only and reflect their personal thinking. They are not to be taken as representative policy or strategy of the organization that the host or guest represents. This show is a production of Money Life Radio, Inc., which retains all rights to its content. This broadcast, either in part or in its entirety, may not be retransmitted, reproduced, or rebroadcast without the express consent of Money Life Radio, Inc. This show is an informational service only. The information here is not to be considered a direct and personal recommendation for any individual to make a specific financial decision or transaction, but rather is meant as an informal resource to help investors make informed decisions. Always consult your financial advisor, accountant, or attorney before making any major financial decision. The information provided has been obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable, but is not guaranteed for either its accuracy or completeness.
Another day, another nickel!